Coming up next on For Profit, For Purpose, a very rare opportunity to hear from a guy who speaks to audiences of thousands and who the large national home builders, the large local home builders go to understand what and why to build what they're building. And he's someone who I listen to and informs my opinion and my strategy in my own portfolio, as well as for my clients. So today we get to get a little bit of an update, but also find out the why and what's behind and drives Todd Bridge. So join me.
I made my first million in real estate when I was 33 years old. I didn't believe it was possible to even be a homeowner after growing up in 20 different homes. I've spent my life learning the game of real estate entrepreneurship, to have the freedom to parent and guide my own schedule, and to express my purpose in the world. What is your purpose? How do you put that purpose behind what you do for money? I believe you were meant to make an impact. My real estate company was built around my purpose of having people discover what they are truly capable of. I'm Katrina Eileen, and this is my podcast, For Profit, For Purpose.
Well, hello, I'm Katrina Eileen Romatowski, and welcome to For Profit, For Purpose, the podcast where we talk all things real estate and all things the purpose behind what we do. Today, we have the man, the myth, the legend, Todd Bridge. And I also have my new co-host, at least for the next four shows, Brian Ray. So welcome to our, you laughed when I said that, Todd.
Well, thank you for having me. Yes, I did.
You do know we all, you like, there's a little hero worship that goes on.
When Todd talks, it's almost like God around our office.
Well, so much for E.F. Hutton. Are you guys too young to remember E.F. Hutton?
I remember the name. It's like a commercial on TV or something.
Yeah. So when E.F. Hutton spoke, everybody just...
Oh, when he speaks, everyone listens.
Yeah.
All right. So Todd Bridge, tell us a little bit about how you got started in the real estate game.
Well, you got to go back a wee bit, you know, so like, and as a wee little lad, you know, a little guy, I would sit around the table with my mother, who was just a phenomenal mentor to me, a work ethic like no other. And we would sit around the kitchen table looking over master plan communities and floor plans. And even at 12 years old, she would ask my advice on things that I noticed within the floor plans, and how the master plan communities came about. And just so you know what her background was, incredibly proud of this woman. She started out as a cleaning lady at an apartment complex, then became the manager. And then the owner of that apartment complex asked her to go sell some condos for her. So this was over just a 3-year span between, I think I was 5 to 7. And then her and Bill Hermy started a company called Map Realty. And they built that up to a multi-million dollar brokerage back in the 70s and early 80s. And she ended up walking away the year I graduated from high school. And within weeks, she got a phone call from a builder, and to paraphrase, I've got this 50 acres. I don't know what to do with it. And that started her consulting career. So right off the bat out of high school, I started going and grabbing data for her from these different subdivisions. Had no idea what I was doing. And, but I got the bug. And I did that only for about 6 to 8 months because she was impossible to work for. So at this point in my life, my father has just gotten sober. He's been sober for maybe 8 months. My mother's starting a new company. Just an incredible amount of stress within our household. But I got to do, this was probably one of the key things that really got me hooked on the industry.
You remember?
My mother asked me to be a host and drive some of the judges around for the MAME Awards.
What's that?
MAME was a tribute to the best realtors, the best builders within the region. It went on to become the Tribute Awards, which is now part of the New Home Council. And I can get into the New Home Council, how we started that. It was pretty cool. But so I get dressed up in a tux to go to this event, and they're handing out the awards, and I'm getting to mingle with the people whom today I consult for or have for the last 20 years. But I was 19, 20 years old. And I just thought it was the coolest thing. So I went away from the real estate industry for a number of years, went into grocery. And in 1995, my old man comes up with this idea based off of one of our employees who had said, you know, there's this whole World Wide Web thing coming along. And we store all this data from these subdivisions. Maybe we could put it out on the web. And I don't know this to be a fact, but being that we were live on the web within weeks of the web going live with a full live data streaming business, I would venture to say we were one of the first, if not the first, data provider live on the web. By far the first new construction data company live on the web back in 95. And I could remember going in and looking at the product and looking at my dad and going, I get this, you need to hire me. And no, we're gonna grow it organically and we're gonna turn around and we're gonna sell it. And every year I just kept bugging him and bugging him and bugging him. And then you go up to 2001. So the company's 6 years old. The company hasn't made any money yet. It's folding. My mother's tired of dumping her consulting dollars into the business.
So wait, hold on a second. I'm curious because that doesn't happen very often. You get stonewalled by your father for how many years?
Yeah, a good 6 years.
That's tenacity.
Yeah.
And if you ever heard no from your parent for 6 years, you really stood in there. You know this is it.
It was one of those things. I looked at the data and I got it. I understood the story that it told. And that I would attribute to spending all that time with my mother sitting around the table.
You saw the communities unfold.
Yeah.
Right there, right?
And so long story short, I mean, I get in there and I'm coming out of the grocery industry. I'm, you know, 29, 28 years old, whatever. But I grabbed the P&L and I'm like, how are you guys afloat? They're like, yeah, we're not. That's why you're here. My father had already assembled a phenomenal team whom when I came on board, we kind of repositioned everybody into their proper roles. And we grew that company from $300,000 in revenue in 2001 to $3.2 million in 2007.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
How did you do that?
Well, again, it was understanding the data. I took a lot of time to understand the clients. And for me, in selling the product and taking the product out to people and talking about it, I would never assume that I had the actual answer. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't people.
That's lesson number one. I would never assume you have the correct answer.
Yeah.
Is that what you said? Yeah.
So never assume you have an answer for somebody prior to asking what their question is. So
that sounds common sense. It's not so common sense.
It's not
some of
so
us have to learn that lesson the hard way. Uh-huh. Many, many times.
Yeah. And you know, I definitely had my lessons along the way for sure. But what I would do is I would go in and I wouldn't ask what answer they were looking for. I would say, give me the question. what do you need to know? Well, I need to know what the absorption rates are over here, and I need to know what's happening with the median price points. I need to know how many subdivisions are here, how many are coming online. Okay, well, let me show you how to get to those answers. And then when I found roadblocks within our system, I had such a phenomenal team. So I'll give a shout out to John Murphy and Dan Butler, if you guys are listening. And they would take the process that I would use to get those answers, and then they started building a system around it. And what's really cool today with where I'm at Level Capital, we're building a system, an internal system that helps with risk management. And Keith Tibbles, who's one of the owners of Level Capital, said it really well just a few weeks ago after John, who came with me, John Murphy came over with me, and he was running through processes within the data. And Keith says, so you're coding Todd's brain. That's what you're doing. So just keep doing it and good luck. And yeah, good luck coding my brain, because there's a lot of shit going on up in there. but he does an absolute phenomenal job of that. So I will walk through use case scenarios on how I look at data and how that impacts my thought process. And the other thing that I always do is I always ask why. And I don't stop asking why until I have all the answers. So, for example,
how do you know when you have all the answers?
Because I don't have to ask why anymore. So, example, sales are declining in Seattle. Why? So, it's typically demand is lessening. Prices are too high. Inventory is too low. So, but each one of those results in another question. If I go into demand's declining, why is demand declining? And if I go into inventory's low, why is inventory low? Is inventory low because sales have exceeded expectations for the previous 5 months and it's driven inventory down? Is it that people aren't listing their houses for sale? And then pricing. So I'll look at three or four different components that are driving the results today. And oftentimes it doesn't even stop there. I mean, it'll just continue to drive down further. So you can look at sales pricing today and the demand today. Why is the demand where it is today? Well, the demand is there today for a multitude of reasons. One, there was a pent-up demand of 40,000 units or more because we've added almost 1 million people into the Puget Sound since 2012. When you do the math on everything and you create the demand scenario, we have not built enough houses. Then you take in the demographics of the millennials that are just now starting to come out of their apartments. COVID was an absolute thrust to push those individuals and those families out of apartments. On top of it, it had already begun because millennials were starting to have kids. Started later on in life than most of us. And then you throw in the interest rate factor, dropping down, what is a 30-year fix right now, you get 2.28. That is free freaking money. If you can buy a house right now and you're not, go to a doctor and figure out what the hell is wrong with you. Because that is free money. And at some point, folks, that rate is going to go up. And it will happen literally overnight. And it will jump by 1 to 2% overnight, potentially, when it occurs.
Just something I've been saying a little bit for a while, and I'm curious what you think of this. How much lower could it possibly go, Todd?
It can't.
It can't.
It can't.
Thank you.
So, when you look at the MBS market and how it operates, the mortgage-backed securities market, how that is sold off onto the secondary market, which, by the way, is strictly the Federal Reserve right now buying up mortgage-backed securities, and they drove the pricing down. So they were buying 2.5 coupons at 1.25. Now, when you add in all the servicing fees, which typically come out to 75 basis points, you're looking at 2.25. Now, those rates should have been that low in roughly March or April, but they weren't because of all the other issues we were having inside of the mortgage market that was going on. So, and kudos to Keith.
Other stuff, Keith, meaning that what happened with COVID and deferring or payments, that kind of thing.
Yeah. So you go back to when Newsom, Governor Newsom of California, first came out and said, hey, you don't have to make your mortgage payment for 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, whatever it was. And what that did all of a sudden was everybody went, hey, I don't have to make my mortgage payment. Now, hey, he doesn't have the legal right to do that. He just doesn't have the power, but people listened and they did it. If you think about who owns the mortgage-backed securities, 50% of them roughly are owned by Freddie, Fannie, Ginnie, and then another 50% are off on the secondary market. You're not going to get a forbearance from that secondary market. They are not going to allow you to stop making payments. They're going to throw you into default immediately. So doing so, and I think what was told at the time was call your servicer. Your servicer, if you call your servicer is going to tell you, well, you're going to have to call Freddie or Fannie, or you're going to have to call ABC Company because they own the note. And I can't do anything without their permission. The servicer doesn't have a right to do any of that either. So the reality was, is only about 50% of the mortgages out there had the capability of even going into some sort of forbearance. And if you look out on the bank's websites, they would give you 3 or 4 options of what could potentially occur under the forbearance. A was, well, we'll roll it into your mortgage at the end. We'll refi your loan. Or there'll be a balloon payment. There might be another option in there. 90% of the time, if not more, it's that balloon payment. And if you can't make your payment for 1 month, what makes you think you can make your payment of 4 to 5 and 6 months all at one time? So that big balloon payment, you know, could be a potential issue. I do think that for many of those that did go into forbearance, that the federal government will step in and they will force Freddie and Fannie to roll that into the end of the loan. I think that's what's going to happen. I have no evidence of that, but COVID obviously was nobody's fault. It definitely wasn't the individuals that lost their jobs. It wasn't their fault. So we'll just have to wait and see what happens. I don't think that we'll see this massive foreclosure portion just because they don't want a 2008 again. That's why the Federal Reserve stepped in and dumped, I think it was $260 billion overnight into the MBS market. And
so why will, when the rates go up, why will it be so quick overnight? By such a large percent.
Because the only reason that the interest rates are down as low as they are in the mid twos is because of where the Federal Reserve started buying mortgage-backed securities and how that forced the yield down on the purchasing. When they pull out and stop purchasing, that's just automatically going to flip right back up to where it should be. So rates are at 2.25. You're going to sell those off onto the secondary market somewhere around 3.5 to 4.5. And then that's just going to snowball upwards. There's not enough purchasing power within the private monies to keep rates that low. There's not enough demand for a 1.25 note. It's just not going to happen. So you'll see that rate go up. If the Fed was, I don't want to use the word smart, if they thought it through properly, they would ease rates upward over time as they pull out so that it's not a huge shock to the system when they do so.
So I'm pretty sure. Well, go ahead, Katrina. I was going to say, I know I could talk about the market just and keep grilling me on that. And I think specifically we did this show because we really did want to know more about you, how you got into this stuff. And Katrina, is there anything you want to say?
I was just going to say, so tell us why real estate? So you grew up with your mom around the kitchen table, looking at communities, looking at zoning, looking at why and where things are going. Then you got into grocery and then you came back to your, so why real estate? And you're in real estate. I mean, you're in it hard, right? Like you're the
people
you can go to.
Well, so when I went off into grocery, I got this customer service side of things. And I tried getting my real estate license when I was 19 and 20, but I have dysgraphia. And I, you know, God bless, I passed it on to my son. But
so, what is that? I don't know what that is.
So what that does for me is it makes reading incredibly challenging. I have to read a book or a pamphlet two or three times or an article two or three times to really absorb it. And then it makes multiple choice questions incredibly challenging for me. So what I actually have to do is I have to go through and I read the answers first. Then I go and read the question, read the answers, read the question, read the question, read the question. Then I can get to the answer. And I failed three times in a row getting my real estate license when I was 20. I think I got, but you had to get 70% or 75 to pass. I missed it by 1% every time. And when my old man decided to bring me on board here at New Home Trends, I just absolutely fell in love with the data. I mean, I had never seen a regression analysis in my life. And I'm thumbing through some reports and I see one. And I walk into his office. I was so jacked. I go, "This is the most cool thing ever. Do you know what this is? You know what this says?" And he's like, "No. Corey makes those. I have no idea." I said, "Are you kidding me? It tells me exactly where I should position my product. It tells me where everybody else is listed and what's selling and how long ago that it sold and the trend line." And he's like, "Yeah, no."
If for those of you who don't know, this is a very simple AI algorithm. This is artificial intelligence. We're predicting what will happen next.
Yeah.
Programming Todd's brain.
Programming Todd's brain. So I just started creating reports because the text version, and I write a lot of reports. I was doing one today. I'm writing an entire report on the Puget Sound. And thank God for graphs, because I throw them in as many times as I can. I can read graphs until the cows come home. I could read a novel of graphs and tell you exactly what it says. Give me a novel of text and I'll tell you in about 3 years what it says, because I'm going to have to read the book three times and I'm going to fall asleep after two pages.
True numbers guy. Born for it.
Yeah.
For sure. All right. Love that. Well, I guess so. And obviously you knew that growing up. So I would imagine this is why you had an affinity for numbers and you're just naturally good with it, right?
No. Honestly, growing up, I wanted to be an architect until I realized how much math you had to take.
Oh, that's funny.
But I think what I'm good at is the critical thinking part. I'm terrible at puzzles. But I'm good at storylines, and I'm, for whatever reason, I'm good at cause and effect. So I can look at multiple things that are occurring within the economy or within the housing market or within the government. And you just start, for me, I just start going, okay, well, if that occurs, then this could occur, or these two things could occur. Okay, if those two things occur, now what happens if the one on the right occurs? We take that fork on the right, then what happens? And then what happens? And you follow that path, and then pretty soon I've got the answer of what could potentially occur.
And fundamentally, you always come down to some probability, I imagine, in your head, some intuition. 98% it's going to go this way, 2% it could go this way, or, you know, how do you see?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, all the time. Because there's, you know, that's the one thing about, especially when you're doing forecasting. A, you're never 100% accurate. I do my best to get as close as I possibly can using all of the information at my disposal.
And I'd like to hear about some of the biggest ones you've called out that like you saw coming. You know, any of those that you can remember nobody else could see, or you could just pick the big winners you saw, like, I knew this was coming.
Okay, so you can actually, you can Google this. I did a report or an interview for the Seattle Times in 2008. And I mapped out exactly how much inventory was going to be on the market, how much inventory was in the pipeline, what was going to happen with in-migration. And I said, in 2012, we're going to start a recovery and we're going to see double-digit appreciation beginning. And I actually did the math on, being that I'm primarily in new construction, I did all the math on exactly how many lots were going to be available on the market and in the pipeline. And it was interesting because I went back and I looked at that in 2015. So you got to figure there's 25,000 lots typically in our pipeline for new construction. And at the time I had predicted we were going to be down to about 14,500 roughly. I was off by 600 lots.
Wow.
I will say this, that I missed the housing recovery. I called it to start in 2012. It began in November 2011. It was close.
You missed it.
I tell you what, I got death threats from that article I did in 2008.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Yep. Some people felt strongly, apparently.
Well, yeah, because it was, you know, it was really right at the beginning of the financial crisis. And when, you know, you start moving forward into 2009 and 10 and really 11, the spring of 11 was the absolute bottom. The phone calls I was getting was in 2008. I mean, it was like, you're the most optimistic beep, 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 ucker in the world. You should come talk to me. We should go through numbers. There was another guy that blogged in Seattle who mocked my predictions over and over and over again. I think he's gone now. I don't know. I never heard from him again. I offered to sit down and meet with me. And I said, I'll go through the numbers with you. And he goes, well, just tell me the numbers. I said, no, we're going to sit down and we're going to sit down face to face and we'll talk about the numbers. Because he was quite insulting, hiding behind his blog. could be a little intimidating. I don't know.
So
nobody knows your stature, but you can give it to him if you want.
Yeah, I'm
back to 2006, and what was your message then?
So I will say that I missed the amount of mortgage.
How did people feel about you then?
So I talked about in 2006 the oversupply, and there was something coming, and I missed. This was my biggest learning lesson. There have been three in my career. This by far was the largest because I missed the amount of mortgage fraud that was occurring. And after that, I vowed I wasn't going to miss anything again. So I became the most diligent student that I could possibly become. I mean, I read everything under the sun that had to do with the stock market, the bond market, the Fed, the Treasury, everything that impacts us today. Because while Seattle is a niche of its own and a small little economy of its own, we are impacted by the greater economy and the global economy. And it was important for me to make sure that I understood all that to a degree, and I'm learning stuff every day. I read for probably 3 hours a day.
What would you say the lesson is? You said that was your biggest lesson. If you were talking to, you know, some young people just learning this, what was the lesson that you learned there? What would you tell them?
Don't get caught in your bubble.
Ooh.
So for realtors in particular, and I'll say this, I'll tell this story because I told Katrina this story earlier. And just so you know my personality, I am brutally honest. I try not to be mean, but I'm going to be honest.
What are you talking about? You try not to be mean?
Yeah. Well, you know.
It feels like a 2x4, Todd.
It can come across like a 2x4 at times. But I will tell you that I've had people come up to me years later and say, I really appreciated that. It's what I needed to hear. So I'm going to tell you what you need to hear, not what you want to hear. That's just who I am. So I am in front of a group of realtors in late 2006. And I was going through the supply. Sales had already started declining in the third quarter of 2005. Pricing was still going up at double digits. Inventory was climbing. There was one builder that had 180 some odd spec inventory out there. Mm-hmm. And so you can see the writing on the wall. And I said, just so you guys know, the market is going to tank. I didn't think it was going to tank as far as it did because, again, I didn't understand the mortgage side of the market. And I said, unfortunately, 75% of you guys are not going to be here in a few years. And the looks that I got could kill.
By the way, you're going to be gone.
Yeah, you're going to be gone. And so you just imagine, I've got a room full of 150 realtors and they're all just sitting back like, oh, who's this frickin' joker? I don't think they said frickin' either. And I said, because here's the issue. Over the last 4 years, 5 years, a monkey could have sold real estate.
That's true too.
Uh-huh. And I said, and most of you guys, and maybe not you guys in this room, but most realtors treat this as a job, mm-hmm. not a business, not a career, a job. And you go where you're told, you do what you're told. That doesn't work in this industry. It definitely doesn't work for realtors. If you want to be successful, you got to look at the most successful realtors and what they do differently. And, you know, I think I said the same thing about builders in 2008, 2009 at a BIA function, and I got booed. You know, but it was the truth. And to be honest, I mean,
2x40 on you.
What's that?
I said they'll take out their 2x4 on you.
Yeah. You better get a 4x4.
So that, I heard the first lesson you learned, which is don't get caught in your bubble. And you said there were two other big lessons you learned in your life.
Yeah.
Give us those.
So I went into a meeting and I was with a builder and I had never seen their product. And he was like, well, Todd, where should I go? What's some up and coming markets that I need to be in? And I just rattled off some of the hottest markets in the Puget Sound. And he's just looking at me like, And I walked out of there thinking, well, Jesus Christ, I just told you where the hottest markets were. Then I go out to his website and I was like, oh, yeah, no, that product won't work there. Or there. Or there. That'll work in Wallingford. That'll work in Greenwood. That'll work on the east side, but that ain't going to work in any of the geographical areas that I told them to go to. So that was a lesson for me. Now, whenever I go in to meet with somebody, I study up on them. I study up on whether they're a realtor, whether they're a builder or a developer, whomever they are. I walk in there and I know as much as I can about their business, what they do and how they operate.
So what would be your advice how would you say that to like your sons? You're giving them advice or what? How do you sum that lesson up?
Don't, in a nutshell, don't ever try to bullshit your way through something because you're going to get caught. And there is nothing more embarrassing than getting caught trying to bullshit your way through something. If you don't know, simply state you don't know and you'll look it up. I've got resources for that. I'll get that answer to you. What you really should do is come prepared and have all those answers. So even if you're a realtor and you're dealing with a resale client, gosh, don't just look at what the three comps are. Look at the 20 homes nearby that have sold. What's the difference? What's the additional value of a bedroom versus a bathroom versus a remodel versus an outdoor living space? And then talk about the trends. Talk about your months of inventory. What's happened over the last 4 to 5 to 6 months? Not only here in this little neighborhood, but in the county or the region for that matter. Because that tells the entire story.
Got it. And the third lesson?
It pretty much came down to the it was similar to the second one that I had learned. I had gotten called into Seattle. Mind you, I'm green. I had been here with the company for 6 months, 7 months. And I got thrown into a meeting with, again, nobody. I couldn't even do the research on this one. And I tried to bullshit my way through it. So that's the one where, you know, I got caught bullshitting. And that was early on. So I never bullshitted again. And then the next one was come prepared to the meeting. And now the funniest story that's ever happened to me was, again, I'm here at the company for 8 months. I literally just jumped off of a coffee truck. And my mother comes in. She says, hey, I need you to go down to, on your way home, stop and do a talk for Pierce County MBA. Like, I'm not going down to do a talk on Pierce County MBA. Oh, you'll be fine. Just read the slides.
You'll be fine.
There's going to be like 15 people there. You'll be fine.
Your mother's telling you to do it.
Yeah. And so I do it. And I walk into this room. And I'm looking around. There's not 15. She left a zero off the end. So there's 150 people in there. And looking back on it, it was the president of Centex, the VP of Centex, land acquisition, all these guys, D.R. Horton, Quadrant, KeyBank, Bank of America, Citibank. I mean, every who's who in the whole goddamn industry is there. So I start the presentation. And I am just sweating bullets. I mean, I'm having flashbacks to the eighth grade when you couldn't get up in front of your class and talk. And I'm standing 20 feet away from my screen with a laser pointer, nervous. You know what a laser pointer does when your hand is shaking and you're 20 feet away? That spread is like, you know, that far apart. And my hand's just doing this the whole time. So I'd go to point at a number and that laser pointer would just go, wah, 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 wah. I finally put it down and I continued on, just read through the slides. I made it through. I got a couple of people went, nice job. And then my mother, when I got back to the office, she asked how it was. And I frankly said, I want to strangle you at this point. And she says, okay, just know this, that even at your level today, with the data that you have at your disposal, you knew twice as much as they did. That made me feel just a little bit better. I knew she was completely wrong at that point in my career. But again, if I didn't get thrown into the fire like that, and I didn't jump outside, well, I shouldn't say I jumped, I got pushed outside of my comfort zone. If that hadn't occurred, I wouldn't be able to do the speaking events that I do today. And I can stand in front of my largest crowd, I think has been 1,000 people, and to do a presentation seamlessly. And I study. I mean, that was one of those lessons, like, oh my God, I got to study this stuff. I got to know it inside and out.
Nothing so, like being shown up or embarrassed or made super uncomfortable for somebody to learn a lesson.
But it was a really, really good lesson. And not to get discouraged by it, because it's, we're all going to fail. We're all going to stumble. We're all going to fall. And it doesn't matter how many times you fall. It matters how many times you get up, right? You hear that adage all the time. You just got to get up and go do it again. Don't make the same mistake twice. I'll say this. I haven't done that. Take that back. There's one developer, very large developer in the Puget Sound, who set a meeting with me, and I missed the meeting. It was the only meeting I had ever missed. So we rescheduled it, and I didn't write it down. I missed it again.
That was not meant to be.
No, it wasn't meant to be.
Or is that just the way we let ourselves slide? So talk about a job versus being an entrepreneur, being a real estate professional.
You got to enjoy it, and you got to enjoy the journey. You got to be passionate about it. There's the old saying, if you do what you love, it's not a job kind of thing. It's still the job. I mean, let's be honest. It's hard work. But look for the rewards, the little wins. So all of the shifts that we make as entrepreneurs, It happens here first. It's right here. It doesn't happen every single day. I will say this. So when I started at New Home Trends, the first thing I did, I walked into my little cubicle that I had, and I wrote a big 50 on a whiteboard that I had. It was the only thing I wrote on that board. And my old man walked by and he goes, "What's that mean?" That's for me. For me, it meant 50K. That was what I needed to get the monthly billing to keep the company afloat. And I did that. So we were averaging about 32,000 a month. And I did that within 6 months. I got it up to 50K. And once I hit 50K, I wrote 100. Once I hit 100, I wrote 150. Then I wrote 200. And then I wrote 250. Because you have to visualize where you're going to go. You've got to have a really good idea on the destination, and you've got to put a game plan on how to get there. That game plan is going to shift and it's going to change. But if you don't know your destination, you're going to get lost. So I did this with my children. I put both my kids in the car when they turned 16 or 15 and they were learning to drive. And I said, "Let's just go." So we hit the road. Kids would come to us, a turn in the road, and, "Well, where should I go?" "Just go." So they make a turn and they go. And next thing I know, from Mill Creek, we're on the backside of Fall City. And I said to my son, I go, "Okay, let's go home." "Well, how do I get there?" And I'm like, "Well, what do you mean? How do you get there? You got here. Didn't you know where you were going? You just told me to drive." I said, "Yeah, but every time you came to a fork in the road, you made a decision on which way to go. That decision has consequences. That decision is going to lead to 10, 20, 30 other decisions that you're going to have to make." Now, for this particular exercise that I did for them, it was specifically to inform them that you always need to find your pathway home. But I also did this for an employee that I brought on and said, you have to know your end result. You have to know, because you're going to choose a path, and that path is going to lead you somewhere. and it may not lead to the destination that you have chosen for yourself. So find your destination, choose a path, and let's work towards that path.
Words of wisdom, man. And
every now and then.
You like pranking your sons.
Yes, it was. Definitely. My oldest is still scarred from, so I love scaring people when I was younger. Well, I'll still do it. I did it to somebody the other day in my house. This one was mean. I'll give you that. And I've apologized to him, and I've loaned him a lot of money because of it. He was 6 years old, and he steps out onto the backyard, and we had this big row of Fitinia trees, Primidalis, excuse me. And as he exited out the sliding glass door, I reached through the Primidalis, grabbed him, and pulled him through the trees. He's still scarred and angry.
And I've loaned him lots of money because of it. Okay, Todd, last question. Tell, what's your why? What's your why behind
you? So that was an interesting process to figure out my why. And I actually figured out my why before coming here. My why is because I love to teach. I love to share the knowledge that I gain, and I love to share it with other people within the industry. And I love to help people grow their businesses, and become successful. If you become successful yourself and you don't help others become successful, where's the joy in that, right? At the end of the day, you're standing on top of a mountain and you're all by yourself. With my employees that I've had over the years, and I've had anywhere from 13 to 35, it is, and I believe that a good leader raises the people around them, find the potential in those people, pull it out of them, nurture that, and allow them to become successful. I had a young man who came to work for me right out of college, and he's gone on to have just a phenomenal career. And he's doing housing analytics for a large company now, incredibly successful, and super proud of him. We had to pull some things out of him. He had done a report for us, and it was due on Monday, and I get it, or it was due on Monday, and I come in on Friday. I go, hey, I need to review that report. Yeah, I haven't started. It's due Monday. Yeah, well, I didn't know how to do it. Mind you, he'd only been here for just a matter of maybe 2 months, 3 months. And I'm like, and I won't use his name because I love him to death. I'm like, dude, this is not college. You don't have a goddamn choice on doing the work or not. You're paid to do the work. And if you don't know how to do it, you need to learn to ask. I was pretty hot at the time. But then circled back around with him and I said, okay, so tell me the lesson. And he repeated what he had learned. And he's gone on to become an incredible consultant today.
Nice. All right. Well, in closing, I guess we want to give you an opportunity. Is there anything, if this is your platform and you've been on many, but you're reaching the platform or the humanity at large, anything you want to say?
I feel like I've been talking for an hour.
Only 45 minutes.
Oh, well, piece of cake. I don't know.
What's most important to you?
Family. And then it's for me, it's been, and this last year has been an interesting journey for me. Figuring out exactly what my needs are and then doing everything that I can to fulfill those needs. Surrounding myself with successful people. I was told this at a very young age and it didn't resonate. You are who you associate with. Mm-hmm. So if you're a knucklehead and you're hanging around other knuckleheads, you're going to remain a knucklehead. If you choose to be around people who are smarter, more driven, more focused, then that's what you will become. And I've still got knuckleheads in my life. We all do.
And we love them.
And we love them. But when I have an opportunity to be around guys that are just brilliant, man, I jump at that opportunity. And I appreciate all the kind words that you've said about me today and always. But I will say this to you, I never walk into the room assuming I am the smartest guy in there or that I know the most about the real estate market. Because the moment I do that is the moment I turn off my learning capability. And I listen to other economists talk. I listen to other housing forecasts. And I may disagree at times. There have been times I've sat back and went, wrong. but I rein myself in, because letting go of that kind of pride allows me to continue to learn. Never stop being a student and never stop sharing your knowledge.
All right, you heard it. That was some wise words right there.
So my favorite is, don't give your answer before you know their question. That one, and always ask why and keep asking until you know the answer.
Yeah.
And I love scaring 6-year-olds through the big
gate. Oh, yeah, that's fun too. Uh-huh. I've got a 6-year-old you can scare. I don't know.
Well, tell people where they can find you, where they can keep up with you and what you're doing, and, you know, give us that.
So guys, I'm over at Level Capital right now. If you want to get a hold of me, it's Todd with 2 D's dot Britch, BRITSCH at levelcapital.com. We are, private money lender, but we're in between hard money and conventional lending. So it's been a nice move for me. One, I get to work with brilliant people, and I love that. And I still get to do this kind of stuff and share some knowledge with the world. So if you have any questions, if you need money for vertical financing, not flips, we don't do flips. We only do new construction, but.
And how big is too big and how little is too little?
There is no too little. And
so you just do a single family home?
We'll do a single family home. Right now we're looking at a 36 unit townhome project.
There's no too little. We're looking at a 36 unit townhome project.
But so we just did a DADU as well.
Oh, really?
Right. Yeah.
Oh, that's
great. That's about as little as they get.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
All right. Well, Todd, thank you so much for being open, generous, and sharing.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Awesome.
Cheers.
Well, we're going to have you back for the numbers. We're going to be doing another update. We're going to rope you into.
I am doing my first live in-person forecast on November 5th.
What? Where?
RIA, Real Estate Investment Forum.
Awesome. Okay. Well, we're going to be tuning into that, and we're going to be prepared. Maybe we'll be at the tower then soon.
Love the tower.
All right. Okay. Well, you know, that's it. That's it for For Profit, For Purpose this week. Thank you. And we'll see you soon.
I would love to hear about your purpose. I'm always looking for like-minded people to collaborate with, interview, or do business with. Reach out to me directly at 425-230-4499. Not sure what your purpose is? I'm happy to share the guide that helped me discover mine. If you'd like that guide and a free copy of my Amazon best-selling investment book for real estate, visit my website at katrinaeileen.com. If this podcast brings you value, please like, subscribe, and share. Thank you for listening to For Profit, For Purpose.